Blog Talk Radio.
Flowing into the sea.
plant operator, Tokyo Electric Power Company, said the plant released what it is believed to be untainted rainwater to the Pacific in order to avoid flooding near the tanks, a step that could violate safety rules, the Nuclear Regulation Authority said. TEPCO says that radioactivity in the released water was within allowed discharge limits, but duty regulators at the plant are checking. Recent acknowledgement by officials that contaminated water is leaking from underground and storage tanks into the ocean have triggered concerns about the plant's safety. The meteorological agency said that the storm dumped an unprecedented amount of rainfall in Kyoto and two of its neighboring prefectures. It passed overnight, dumping as much as 8 centimeters per hour. It lifted a special warning for the area early Monday, but urged residents to stay alert. In Kyoto, where the city's major Katsura River flooded about 260,000 people in the prefecture capital alone, were told to evacuate. Hundreds of thousands of others were also ordered to evacuate across Japan.
I'll put it on here.
Sorry, we're talking about a glass of water here.
All right, but the most incredible thing about this is that there is no mention of this. This is a disaster, and there's no mention of it. And,
well, it's only a disaster because it's threatening
the world.
It's threatening the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant.
Yeah, but it's flooding into
not
the
in
Pacific
the
Ocean.
Yeah,
and
who knows?
It's destroying everything. I mean, it's like you see some of the pictures.
Well, they've only had only one person has been killed, believe it or not.
Yeah, but it's not that, Lila. You know,
they're not even telling you how many
people have been killed so far.
It's the ecological.
There's another report that shows that people all over the North America are dying from the Fukushima radiation. People on the West Coast.
No,
you're
not listening.
No.
I said, from the standpoint of people being killed, we had more people killed in the fire here. But it's the ecological disaster that it is, the radioactivity that's to be of such a concern. And who knows with that nuclear reactor?
Well,
they never really stabilized it.
Here's another one. Okay, this is from the Euro Times. Hundreds of thousands of people in Japan have been forced to evacuate their homes amid massive typhoon could wreak havoc. Typhoon Manyi struck the mainland on Sunday. It's basically the same information, but says alert levels have now been raised amid concerns the storm could result in more contaminated water running out to the sea. About 300 tons of mildly contaminated groundwater is entering the ocean every day, having passed under the reactors. If that's not news, I don't know what the hell is, right? But that's news they don't want you to know. Here's more stuff on this.
I can't imagine that they're going to hold the Olympics thing.
Oh, that's another article I have on that, by the way. Just wanted you to read it.
I wouldn't go there.
No.
Never heard of anything so ridiculous in my entire life. To hold the Olympics in a country with a seeping radioactivity from a damaged nuclear plant.
Evacuate their homes amid fear the massive typhoon could wreak havoc. Typhoon Manyi struck the mainland on Sunday, packing gusts of winds of more than 160 kilometers per hour and doubling the region's annual rainfall. At least two people have been found dead and more than 100 others have been hurt. Although the typhoon is slightly losing strength, it's hit the Fukushima atomic power plant in the northeast, bringing heavy rain to surrounding areas. Alert levels have now been raised amid concerns the storm could result in more contaminated water running out to sea. Around 300 tons of mildly contaminated groundwater is entering the ocean every day, having passed under the reactors.
Yeah, this is the site. It was awesome seeing this water come in. What I wanted to mention was this other article regarding the Tokyo Olympics. The Tokyo Olympics bid was fixed by the International Olympic Committee, nuclear committee, lobby. Yeah, isn't that amazing?
What a surprise.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. What the hell are you getting away with? But I couldn't figure out why they got it. You know, I mean, considering what the nightmare that's there. Tokyo Olympics bid was fixed by the International Olympic Committee's nuclear lobby. And, excuse me. The lame acquiescence of International Olympic Committee to Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's
blatant lies about
Fukushima
radiation
leaks being under control is an act of reckless negligence on the health risk to young athletes aiming for a spot in the 2020 Olympics. Man, is that so true? That's so scary to death.
Mm-hmm.
The Olympics hosting rights was stolen from safer and better-off candidate cities, Istanbul and Madrid, by a well-financed lobbying effort from Japan's National Committee and the Education and Sports Ministry, which provides murky donations for sports programs in developing countries.
The hidden factor behind Tokyo's campaign of radiation denial was quiet support from the global nuclear industry acting through the International Olympic Committee's corporate sponsorship program. The political influence and the corruption behind this campaign was so obvious that even the semi-government NHK television news has raised questions about bribery in the bidding process. I can't believe that any athlete would want to go there.
Well, I would think that they would want to ban that. They'd boycott that Olympics just for their own safety. But, you know, hey, what can I tell you?
Many of the big multinationals that finance the International Olympic Committee and not readily associated with the Olympic goals of good health, much less amateur sports. Anyone who believes in the healthy, fun meal hype from McDonald's does not comprehend the hazards of obesity and clogged arteries. Besides household names like toothpaste giant P&G and smartphone maker Samsung, some brands,
brands on the sponsored list, such as Altos,
are virtually unknown. Yeah. Every corporation on the International Olympic Committee global sponsor list is, in fact, connected with the nuclear industry and some directly with the melted down of the Fukushima plant. Here's a look at the list. General Electric, builder of the Fukushima Mark I reactors, number 1, 2, and 6, and designers of MOX shroud for reactors number 3 and 4, the tritium enhanced explosion of reactor 3 massively contaminated the Kanto region, including Tokyo's watershed. Panasonic. Besides television and home appliances, this Japanese electronics giant is a manufacturer of radiation measuring equipment used by TEPCO and other atomic energy players, including Iran's nuclear program. Altos, a French IT company that provides command
and control systems for 70 nuclear power plants around the world, and which is also involved in the upgrade of British nuclear power plants recently acquired by Hitachi GE. Dow, along with partner company Gramer and chemical giant produces resins, polishing compounds, and cleansers and filters for the nation's worldwide nuclear industry.
Samsung, builder of nuclear plants in South Korea and for export, including the Middle East, in partnership with Toshiba, which built reactor number 5 at Fukushima. P&G, Procter & Gamble directors Alan J. Laffley is a board member of GE, and James McNerney, Jr. is a retired top-ranking GE executive.
Omega, the Swiss watchmaker, uses its precision timing technology for monitoring instruments used inside nuclear power plants. McDonald's board member Enrique Hernandez is CEO of Intercon Security, which provides armed guards for Southern California's Edison's San Onofre reactors.
Onofre reactors.
And other
nuclear power plants. Coca-Cola, the soft drink maker's board of directors includes Jacob Wallenberg, director of ABB, along with Donald Rumsfeld, when it sold two nuclear reactors to North Korea under investigation. ABB sold its nuclear division to BNFL in the UK, which has since been taken over by Hitachi and GE.
As you get all the biggest criminals in the world, there,
yeah.
You know?
Alexis Fernandez, a lawyer for and board member of Entergy, the U.S. power company with several radiation-leaking plants, and retired Senator Sam Nunn, former Secretary of Defense and board member of GE. It's no wonder that Tokyo won the 2020 Olympics, when voting was actually a litmus test for nuclear safety, in quotes. Radiation denial is key to the expansion of the nuclear industry, as Hitachi, Toshiba, and GE are now pushing in Vietnam, Turkey, the United
Arab
Emirates,
yeah.
The UK, India, and many other countries. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, this is why we're not hearing anything in the United States, because we have so many leaking nuclear reactors, all right, and they're trying to shut everything down, all right, and they're not, and they're trying to get permits to extend them, all right, and they're trying to, you know, they want to build new ones, all right. Everything is kept hush hush, and the nuclear industry is just like owns, you know, with the government owns the media.
The nuclear industry, the financial industry, and the pharmaceutical industry.
They own the media. They own government, they own the media.
Yeah.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, put on your blinders. As if wearing blinders, the IOC delegates at Buenos Aires ignored media questions about the thousands of tons of radiation contaminating water leaking from Fukushima nuclear plant. Arguably worse is the ash from Tokyo's incinerators that burned Fukushima's combustible waste for 2 years. The highly radioactive cinders were dumped into landfills in Tokyo Bay, which will be the site of the Olympic Village and most of the sports venues. Oh, my God. The Arakawa River, which flows into Tokyo Bay, is also contaminated in its upper reaches by clouds drifting in from the Pacific. The forests surround Tokyo watershed and Okutama, which provide drinking water to the capital, are dangerously drenched by radioactive rainfall, and the national food supply is so irradiated that regulators have had to raise the food safety level. The risk of more clouds of radioactive fallout sweeping toward Tokyo is not hypothetical, but an inevitable consequence of uncontrollable meltdowns of hundreds of tons of nuclear fuel at Fukushima. And the danger is amplified by recurrent earthquakes along Japan, major fault lines and consequent volcanic eruptions, which pose a constant threat to the nearby nuclear plants at Hamaoka or the seaside below Mount Fuji and Tokai
in neighboring Ibaraki, twin plants in Fukushima. Another explosion at any of these nuclear sites would force the evacuation of 50 million residents, or one-third of the population. A major quake or volcanic eruption long overdue in the nearby Nankai Trough and Mount Fuji, and even under Tokyo itself, would close the capital's airports, forcing thousands of Olympic athletes and spectators, along with millions of residents, to flee in the opposite direction, directly into Fukushima Prefecture. Tokyo is a killing field waiting to happen. The Japanese host city team was led by JOC chief Tesenkazu Takeda, who is the successor to his father, Prince Takeda, a cavalry officer in Manchuria who supervised the Unit 703 bioweapons program. An equestrian contestant at the Berlin Olympics, Prince Tuzin Yoshi organized the military looting of East Asia and also personally authorized plague and virus attacks against Chinese cities and other lethal experiments on prisoners. Oh, my God. The aristocratic war veteran evaded prosecution for war crimes because the U.S. Army recruited Unit 731 scientists and was then appointed by Prime Minister Nobusuke Fishi, founder of Japan's nuclear weapons program, and Ames' grandfather to head the bidding for the 1964 Olympics. Oh, my God. The counterpart for the private sector is Masato Mizuno, former chief of Mizuno Sports and CEO of the Tokyo Bidding Company, who led the outreach to the IOC corporate sponsors. The bid was originally launched by then-Tokyo governor Shintaro Ishihara, whose resignation, as alleged in local media reports, was due to the diversion of Olympic donations for his provocative visits and attempt to purchase the disputed Senkaku Daio Islands. These connections are worthy of an Interpol investigation, since the IOC is incapable of policing itself.
Okay. Backlash against the heist. The French cartoon that provoked an angry protest by Chimpira, slang for punks or Yakuza wannabes, is only the start of a worldwide backlash against the Tokyo heist. I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
The usually timid Japanese media are raising questions about Abe's a lack of credibility on the radiation issue and Japan's economic health. In contrast to the hype in Buenos Aires about Tokyo's prosperity, the national debt stands at $10 trillion U.S. dollars, making the Japanese by far the most indebted people on the planet. And even TEPCO officials, including its vice president in charge of Fukushima operations, Zengo Ayazawa, have scoffed at Abe's nonsense and countered with the radioactive water leaks are out of control despite his team's best effort. And Abe is a shameless liar and buffoon, while his pro-nuclear allies among IOC sponsors are only kidding themselves in a black comedy destined to careen into further disaster. The Tokyo bid is a hard act to follow, and only thing that could equal this bad joke is if Ukraine places a bid to host the 2024 Chernobyl Olympics.
And this article was by Yoichi Shimatsu, a Hong Kong-based science writer.
Former editor of Japan Time Weekly in Tokyo. Well, that was a hell of an article.
Scary.
What do you think?
Very scary. I wouldn't go to that country.
And
Caroline Kennedy wants to become ambassador there. I mean, God.
They just want to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Get rid of the whole family is what they're about.
Yeah. Can't she see that? I hope she doesn't accept that.
Maybe she's too vain. I don't know to see that. Anyway. Pretty sick stuff. You know, weapons of mass destruction produced and used by the United States. This is an interesting article because it kind of details... We're bitching and moaning about the weapons of chemical weapons. Okay.
What's depleted uranium?
Yeah.
And what's white phosphorus?
Right. Chemical weapons were used in Syria by whom is not clear. But in Iraq, weapons of mass destruction were used, and we know is very clear who used it, and that was the United States. Already in 2005, the Brussels Tribunal published, we're reading this from, published extensive reports on the use of white phosphorus in Iraq. Goes back there. American pilots dropped controversial incendiary agent napalm on Iraqi troops during the advance on Baghdad. We napalmed those bridge approaches. This is what somebody, this is a quote. Unfortunately, there were people there who could see them in the cockpit video. They were Iraqi soldiers. It's no great way to die. The generals love napalm. It has a big psychological effect. And that was written in The Independent in August 2003. But in April of 2003, the BBC reported, quote, was, one is sitting there in front of me on a stretcher. His face is badly burned. Bits of skin are peeling off. Other areas are simply weeping wounds. His hands are bandaged. The other man, his nephew, has lost all the skin off his back. It's a sickening sight. One of the men explains that the bombing from an American aircraft came without warning. There was no reason to attack their house. They had no weapons and were just relaxing at home. Speaking through a U.S. Marine interpreter, the man said the U.S. airstrike killed 11 members of his family and 6 were also badly burned as the phosphorus turned the inside of his home white hot. And apparently, for the U.S., nothing is outlawed. Well, white phosphorus, daisy cutters, depleted uranium, thermobaric bombs, cluster bombs, napalm, microwaves weapons, and the U.S. uses weapons of mass destruction against civilians. And how many times will they have to adjust their official version, right? And this was a BBC report in 2003, right? The United Nations banned the use of napalm against civilians in 1980 after pictures of a naked wounded girl in Vietnam shocked the world. And the United States, which didn't endorse the convention, is the only nation in the world still using napalm. And let's be very clear, white phosphorus, uranium weapons, napalm, cluster ammunition, they are all weapons of mass destruction, and only the U.S. is using them. And according to numerous reports and witnesses, against Iraqi civilians. This report, all right, is frightening. In other words, the Pentagon considers white phosphorus an illegal chemical weapon, all right, even though they're using the damn stuff. Now, does that make sense?
Nope.
All right. Iraq's possible employment of phosphorus chemical weapons in late February 1991, following the coalition forces' overwhelming victory over Iraq, that was George H.W. Bush, Kurdish rebels stepped up their struggle against Iraqi forces in northern Iraq and got blasted. During the brutal crackdown that followed the Kurdish uprising, Iraqi forces loyal to President Saddam may have possibly used white phosphorus chemical weapons against Kurdish rebels and the populace in Ebro. So, I mean, this goes on and on and on, guys, you know? So, you know, let's be real. This Obama is a tool, and he's a hypocritical, lying son of a bitch, and, you know, he's just a madman, and we got to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I got a little cold here. I'm trying to get myself going. Oh, Dick Blumenthal bullshit. Okay, this is a brilliant. He had a Wolf Blitzer. Want to hear this?
I read it. That made me sick.
Did it make you sick? The reason why I brought this up is because Blumenthal is from Connecticut. He took over Lieberman's seat, of all things, you know. And he's just as Zionistic as Lieberman, if not more. It can be. Anyway. Oh, pass on that. He's talking to Wolf Blitzer. I mean, this is so amazing. It should be in Yiddish.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, really. Right. Did you know in 2008 Israel attacked Gaza with white phosphorus? Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Absolutely. Anyway. Let me see. I got so much good stuff here. Drive you crazy. Ron Paul, who kind of betrayed everybody, but he was right on a couple of things. He said, it's no coincidence that the century of total war coincided with the century of central banking. Maybe true.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that could be true.
And the Fed.
Yeah.
And the Fed. So let's see what else we got here. This is interesting. I'm going to have you read this because this is kind of an interesting thing. Got this today. It's about Syria, and it's two statements about Syria made by a reporter from Syria.
It's all about oil and gas. Rebellion backed by the U.S. is so obvious, so blatant, the entire world sees it. Okay. I asked Syrian friends to ask people there to describe their life under Assad, to share with the U.S. Here are some experts of one. They all have similar stories of reforms and feelings of safety, and it shows a surprising link between Benghazi and Syria. I have lived over 20 years in perfect peace and safety. There was almost no crime here at all. No drug dealers, smugglers, bank robbers, carjackers, porn stars, store robberies. Things we were worried about here were health problems or car wrecks. I can tell you that from 2000 to 2007, the first term of Dr. Bashar al-Assad, he did not make any glaring mistakes or scandals. He made huge and sweeping reforms and progress. For example, civil servant wages were increased repeatedly. Hospitals, schools, roads, and infrastructure were completed. When 2007 came and his term was over, I was really expecting that President al-Assad would make a switch to a full democracy and make free elections and change the constitution to reflect new ways. But he did not. They followed through the normal constitutional procedure and he was reelected. I still felt that he was so educated, modern, and dynamic that it was only a matter of time that he would revolutionize Syria and go with open elections. The term is every 7 years, so his chance would be in 2014. Then in 2010, a huge national gas field, largest in the world, was discovered offshore of Syria. Contracts were signed with Russia to retrieve the gas. Then suddenly, without warning, March 2011, in Deraa, Syria, a revolution began. Was it revolution, or was it regime change financed by foreign countries in order to procure the gas field? The leader of that revolution in Deraa was a very tiny, insignificant town on the Jordanian border, was an Islamic cleric. This middle-aged man who had never accomplished anything noteworthy in his life suddenly was inventing freedom in Syria. Guess where that man lives today? He lives in Benghazi, Libya. What would a middle-aged cleric from... From a very tiny town in Syria be doing thousands of miles away in a totally foreign country. Like Libya, which is even more unsafe to live in than Syria, why would he move there of all places? Hick is one of the many huge pro-Assad rallies that never made it on the U.S. media. That's the picture that's below. This picture, Leo, can you move it up? You should see this picture. I mean, they're just people everywhere.
Oh my God.
People
are swarming this inner city supporting them. And pro-Assad rally. So,
I don't know when that was. It doesn't really say.
Well, I can tell you.
It doesn't say when the picture was.
Yeah. It doesn't say, but it was during this period of time. So.
No, they didn't say that.
Well, in the article was written recently. But anyway. The whole thing is, once you put oil and natural gas and huge offshore, I mean, that's why. I mean, look, why would you think suddenly they like to make Syria a non-functioning state? Okay, so that they can, the oil companies can get in there and take over, and then the Americans can take all the damn oil, and then of course they're good buddies. They're good terrorist buddies. Israel.
Suck off the natural gas.
Yes,
what happened with all those oil reserves in Iran? Iraq?
Yeah. Oh, well, Tex Mars was telling us that they all got sent over to China.
Yeah.
China's paying $2 a gallon, barrel, for Iraqi oil. That was a deal.
Remember, we were going to go in.
Oh, yeah.
And we were told that this, our energy would be really cheap, so support this
war. So what
happened
was China got really cheap energy and broke down our economy, we got stuck with $4 a gallon gasoline.
So actually we went to war so that China could have cheap oil.
Exactly.
If you want to know,
simple.
We
destroyed an entire country, destroyed a civilization, and killed hundreds of thousands of our guys, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So
have cheap oil to mobilize their economy.
But China was not involved with Iraq at all,
mm-hmm.
other than the exploitation of the oil, which Chevron.
Well, that was multinational companies.
And China
launched that attack.
So it was all designed so that China, the economy, could prosper. The American economy would plummet.
Okay.
And the American military would go into hell, you know. It was a way of bankrupting us.
Yeah.
It was all designed. And Obama's still, Obama's still doing it. Still doing the same damn thing. I mean, this was a George Bush policy. And,
there's nothing noble about dying for China, for
no,
China to have
no,
oil.
No, not at all. Anyway.
Makes you sick.
The government hands more than $1 trillion to the wealthy, while deficit is $642 billion. Right? Hey, Layla, what do you think, Layla?
Makes you sick.
Doesn't it make you sick?
When I read these things, I get so upset.
I know. But you know, it's not being said by anybody, and it's, unless you read it in these papers, and no one's broadcasting this stuff.
Nope.
While our government is laying off hundreds and hundreds of thousands and cutting services in the name of cutting deficits, a new report exposes that taxpayers are handing over more than $1 trillion a year to the wealthiest. DC focus on deficits, not jobs. Instead of focusing on jobs, Congress and the White House obsess on how to cut the budget, the things we, the people, do to make our lives and economy better. While the sequester has already cost 900,000 jobs, 1.6 million through 2014, Republicans are threatening to shut down the government and force the country to default on its debt as leverage to force even more cuts. These fucking Republicans are out of their minds. Republican Speaker of the House, John Boehner, has repeatedly said that the country is broke. For example, we're broke. Broke. Going on bankrupt. Boehner said, February 28, 2011. I don't like that. I think he's a boner. And he said here he is saying it on December 11, 2012. Let's be honest. We're broke. So we have to cut and cut and cut, even though the cuts are costing millions of jobs, damaging the economy and prospects of our country and people's future, because supposedly we're broke. Well, you know, Boehner doesn't understand economics at all. You know,
he's told what to say and do.
He's a bank owned, you know. But a report out today from the National Priorities Project shows that the country is handling more than $1 trillion to the already wealthy. That's right. The government is cutting services and laying off hundreds of thousands of people, all right, in the name of cutting deficits while handing more than $1 trillion a year to the wealthiest. The rest of us pay taxes and suffer cuts in jobs and services to make us this money.
Don't correct me, please. Well, you're right
or wrong. And according to the report, lots of 1%ers will pay no taxes at all this year, while the other countries cut jobs and services in the name of cutting the deficit. Now you may read.
Well, you got to read it correctly.
Well,
10 major tax breaks that together total more than $750 billion in tax savings in 2013 are tilted heavily in favor of the top income earners. According to the Congressional Budget Office, 7% of the benefits from these major tax breaks go to the top 1% of households. In fact, according to the Tax Policy Center, nearly 1.2 million taxpayers in the top 1% will owe no income tax at all in 2013, thanks in large part to tax breaks that helped them reduce their tax liability down to zero. Two of the key findings in this report tell a story. Corporate tax breaks will exceed $1 trillion this year, with about 17% of the biggest individual tax breaks going to the top 1% of earners. In fact, many individual tax breaks disproportionately benefit wealthy households. Go ahead, you can.
The country's biggest budget shortfall is not from entitlements. Things we the people are entitled to is as citizens in a prosperous democracy. In government spending, the things we, the people, do to make our lives and the economy better. The deficit is down to $640 billion, while $1 trillion in tax breaks goes to the 1%. Actually, mostly the 1% of the 1%. The deficit talks is a rigged discussion. Why is the country terrified that budget deficits are going to eat us alive? Why don't people know that the deficit is already down more than 50% from the levels Bush left behind, and is falling at the fastest rate since the end of World War II. Why are Republicans able to get away threatening to shut the government and forces the country into default in their drive to cut spending on the things that make our lives better? The reason is that there is a massively funded PR campaign underway to convince people of these things. Fix the Debt, for example, has pumped at least $60 million into a PR campaign to convince people that they have a deficit emergency and must therefore cut back on the things government does. Wall Street billionaire Pete Peterson has pledged $1 billion toward the same end. These are just two sources of the massively funded campaign to convince people that the government should be cut back. Instead of hiring people to fix the infrastructure, instead of having universal health care, etc. And those are just two examples. How many headlines like these has the public seen? Budget deficit reaching point of no return. 20 must-see charts on America's disastrous level of government spending. Budget deficit, debt disaster. Debts must be curbed or it's a disaster for economy. Study and on and on and on and on. And now we learn that the government is handing more than $1 trillion to the 1% and their corporations, like the deficit and only $640 billion in falling. A corruption spiral. We are witnessing here a corruption spiral. This is big money using money to influence the government to give them even more money. And they then use that more money to influence the government even more to give them even more and more money. And they then use this the more money to influence the government. I mean, it goes on and on and on here. This guy's. But what can we do about this? This is about the powerful predatory pigs feeding at the trough and taking it out on the weak. It has to stop. How do we stop the corruption spiral that is eating our economy, our jobs, and the things we the people do to make our lives better? We must get the money out of politics and out of the national discussion. Money is not speech. In a democracy, each person is supposed to have an equal say in speech. Corporate money is supposed to be used to run the corporation, period. Corporations use their money to drive the purpose of the corporations. So corporations, by definition, cannot use their money without the expectation of getting something in return. Even the use of corporate money to fund a little league team is for the purpose of advertising and brand development. So giving money to a politician is done with the expectation of getting a tax break, a contract, a patent, or some other form of advantage over competitors, or otherwise increasing its profits. According to the law, giving anything of value to any public official with the intent of influencing the official is bribery. It is not speech to give money to a politician. It's bribery. It is corruption. And by the way, by the same token, corporations giving their money to lobbying operations is done with the same intent. It is done to influence politicians or use front groups to drive support to politicians, a thing of value, to get them to do something that financially rewards that corporation. You want to finish?
No, go ahead.
And of course, those with the most money are available to have the most influence, which brings them more money, which brings them more influence. All right? And again, a corruption spiral that eats our economy, jobs, and democracy.
Corporate money must be banned from politics or otherwise influencing policy. Corporate money should be used to operate the corporations, period. So how do we stop the influence of billionaires? We just learned that the Koch brothers ran a group that pumped almost $250 million into the election. Aside from that, according to the Sunlight Foundation, the 1% of the 1% funded a huge share of the election all by themselves. The answer here is, of course, limiting the amount individuals can put into campaigns and banning efforts to influence election outside of campaigns themselves. This includes a complete crackdown on the use of special tax status organizations in election activities, front groups, etc. These steps will at least be a start and will give democracy a bit of breathing room. Then we the people might be able to figure out where to go from there. This piece was originally printed by Truthout with permission or license.
But that's amazing, though. This guy's so right. I mean, corporations have no right to, to be paying off politicians.
why they get huge salaries.
Exactly.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. And of course, the sports page, or something, corporate welfare, publicly funded stadiums. But this article really kind of hurts a little bit.
Oh, that's not a particularly good article. I did read it.
Yeah, you didn't like it?
No.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any meat to it.
Right.
Just that more people describe themselves as poor.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
No, that's true. That's all really basically the same.
When people are asked, more people describe themselves as poor rather than middle class.
Yeah.
That's all. That's basically what
it says. Last year, less than 55% of Americans agreed that people like me and my family have a good chance of improving our standard of living. Lowest level since the General Society Survey first asked the question in 1987. So, that pretty much explains what this country is headed for.
Yeah.
And I thought this was funny. Did you read it?
No.
No? This is very funny. Because...
a clothing label.
Yeah, a clothing label from a small American company that sells their product in France. Here's the translation of the French part of the label. On the label it says,
wash with warm water, use mild soap, dry flat, do not use bleach, do not dry in the dryer, do not iron. We are sorry that our president is an idiot. We did not vote for him.
Today that he would waive the prohibition of sanctions 40 and 40A relating to such a transaction. So, you know, it's just a hypocritical joke on what this guy
is
doing. Just hypocritical as hell. And, you know, does the guy, I don't see how the guy has any credibility with anybody anymore. Do you?
I can't imagine that he does.
I just can't. Oh, on a healthy note, let's change the subject. Get some health note here. Could the sun be good for you? Oh yeah.
I think it's excellent for you. I always feel so much better in the summer.
No, I was told I should take vitamin D.
Because you don't go outside.
For the winter. Okay. Everybody should take vitamin D during the winter.
That's why those lights are good.
Our body gets
spectrum lights.
Yes. Our body gets vitamin D from the sun. But as dermatologist Richard Weller suggests, sunlight may confer another surprising benefit too. New research by his team shows that nitric oxide, a chemical transmitter stored in huge reserves in the skin, can be released by UV light to great benefit for our blood pressure and cardiovascular system. What does it mean? Well, it might begin to explain why Scott gets sick more than Australians. Well, Scots
get sick
more than Australians, right? And I'll play a little bit of this if you like.
Yeah.
Before I became a dermatologist, I studied in general medicine, as most dermatologists do in Britain. At the end of that time, I went off to Australia, about 20 years ago. What you learn when you go to Australia is the Australians are very competitive, and they are not magnanimous in victory, and that happened a lot. Oh, and you pommies, you can't play cricket, rugby. I could accept that. But moving into work, and we had each week what's called a journal club, when you'd sit down with the other doctors and you'd study a scientific paper in relation to medicine. And after week one, it was about cardiovascular mortality, a dry subject, how many people die of heart disease, what the rates are. And they were competitive about this. You pommies, your rates of heart disease are shocking. And of course, they were right. Australians have about a third less heart disease than we do, less deaths from heart attacks, heart failure, less strokes. They're generally a healthier bunch. And, of course, they said this was because of their fine moral standing, their exercise, because they're Australians and we're weedy pommies and so on. But, you know, it's not just Australia that has better health than Britain. Within Britain, there is a gradient of health. And this is what's called standardized mortality, basically your chances of dying. This is looking at data from the paper about 20 years ago, but it's true today. Comparing your rates of dying at 50 degrees north, that's the south, that's London and places, by latitude and 55 degrees, the bad news is that's here. I'm from Edinburgh. Worst news, that's even Edinburgh. Okay, so there is... So what accounts for this horrible space here between us up here in southern Scotland and the south? Now, we know about smoking, deep-fried Mars bars, chips, the Glasgow diet, all of these things, but this graph is after taking into account all of these known risk factors. This is after accounting for smoking, social class, diet, all those other known risk factors. We are left with this missing space of increased deaths the further north you go. Now, sunlight, of course, comes into this. And vitamin D has had a great deal of press, and a lot of people get concerned about it. And we need vitamin D. It's now a requirement that children have a certain amount. My grandmother grew up in Glasgow back in the 1920s and 30s, when rickets was a real problem, and cod liver oil was brought in. And that really prevented the rickets that used to be common in this city. And I, as a child, was fed cod liver oil by my grandmother. I distinctly, nobody forgets cod liver oil. But an association, the higher people's blood levels of vitamin D are, the less heart disease they have, the less cancer. There seems to be a lot of data suggesting that vitamin D is very good for you, and it is, to prevent rickets and so on. But if you give people vitamin D supplements, you don't change that high rate of heart disease, and the evidence for preventing cancers is not yet great. So what I'm going to suggest is that vitamin D is not the only story in town. It's not the only reason preventing heart disease. High vitamin D levels, I think, are a marker for sunlight exposure, and sunlight exposure, in methods I'm going to show, is good for heart disease. Anyway, I came back from Australia, and despite the obvious risks to my health, I moved to Aberdeen. Now, in Aberdeen, I started my dermatology training, but I also became interested in research, and in particular, I became interested in this substance, nitric oxide. Now, these three guys up here, Fertrygott, Ignaro, and Murad, won the Nobel Prize for Medicine back in 1998, and they were the first people to describe this new chemical transmitter, nitric oxide. What nitric oxide does is it dilates blood vessels, so it lowers your blood pressure. It also dilates the coronary arteries, so it stops angina. And what was remarkable about it was in the past, when we think of chemical messengers within the body, we thought of complicated things like estrogen and insulin or nerve transmission, very complex processes with very complex chemicals that fit into very complex receptors. And here's this incredibly simple molecule, a nitrogen and an oxygen, that are stuck together. And yet these are hugely important for paining our low blood pressure, for neurotransmission, for many, many things, but particularly cardiovascular health. And I started doing research, and we found, very excitingly, that the skin produces nitric oxide. So it's not just in the cardiovascular system that arises, it arises in the skin. Well, having found that and published that, I thought, well, what's it doing? How do you have low blood pressure in your skin? You know, it's not the heart. What do you do? So I went off to the States, as many people do if they're going to do research, and I spent a few years in Pittsburgh. This is Pittsburgh. And I was interested in these really kind of complex systems. We thought that maybe nitric oxide affected cell death and how cells survive and their resistance to other things. And I first of all started work in cell culture, growing cells. And then I was using knockout mouse models, mice that couldn't make the gene. We worked out a mechanism which I know was helping cells survive. And I then moved back to Edinburgh. And in Edinburgh, the experimental animal we use is the medical student. It's a species close to humans with several advantages over mice. They're free, you don't shave them, they feed themselves, and nobody pickets your office saying, save the lab medical student. So they're really an ideal model. But what we found was that we couldn't reproduce in man the data we had shown in mice. It seemed we couldn't turn off the production of nitric oxide in the skin of humans. We put on creams that blocked the enzyme that made it. We injected things. We couldn't turn off the nitric oxide. And the reason for this, it turned out, after 2 or 3 years' work, was that in the skin, we have huge stores, not of nitric oxide, because nitric oxide is a gas, and it's released, and in a few seconds it's away. But it can be turned into these forms of nitric oxide, nitrate, NO3, nitrite, NO2, nitrosotase, and these are more stable, and your skin has got really large stores of NO. And we then thought to ourselves, well, there's big stores. I wonder if sunlight might activate those stores and release them from the skin, where the stores are about 10 times as big as what's in the circulation. Could the sun activate those stores into the circulation, and there in the circulation can do its good things for your cardiovascular system? Well, I'm an experimental dermatologist, so what we did was we thought we have to expose our experimental animals to sunlight. And so what we did was we took a bunch of volunteers and we exposed them to ultraviolet light. So these are kind of sun lamps. Now, what we were careful to do was vitamin D is made by ultraviolet B rays, and we wanted to separate our story from the vitamin D story. So we used ultraviolet A, which doesn't make vitamin D. When we put people under a lamp for the equivalent of about 30 minutes of sunshine in summer in Edinburgh, what we produced was we produced a rise in circulating nitric oxide. So we put patients with these subjects under the UV, and their NO levels do go up, and their blood pressure goes down, not by much at an individual level, but enough at a population level to shift the rates of heart disease in a whole population. And when we shone UV at them, or when we warmed them up to the same level as the lamps, but didn't actually let the rays hit the skin, this didn't happen. So this seems to be a feature of ultraviolet rays hitting the skin. Now, we're still collecting data. A few good things here. Well, this appeared to be more marked in older people. I'm not sure exactly how much. One of the subjects here was my mother-in-law, and clearly I do not know her age. But certainly, in people older than my wife, this appears to be a more marked effect. And the other thing I should mention was there was no change in vitamin D. This is separate from vitamin D. So vitamin D is good for you. It stops rickets, it provides calcium metabolism, important stuff. But this...
We're at 9 o'clock now, so we're just a little left in the show. But I just wanted to let you know, it's Green Med TV. You can get that from there.
Could the sun be good for your heart? Which should well know.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a very good video.
Yeah, it's about 10 minutes, 13-minute video. And very, very interesting. And anyway, that was the that was it. All right. So just wanted to let you know.
And watch the news with skepticism.
Yeah.
And be alert to all kinds of ways that you could be being fooled.
Yeah.
And just listen and figure out for yourself what you think is really happening.
Yeah. And join us tomorrow
Have
night.
Have an inquiring mind.
Yeah, join us tomorrow night. We're going to be talking more about USDA programs of meat contamination, the World Health Organization, which refuses to publish cancers and birth defects in Iraq, okay, and why, and a whole other bunch of things, and maybe a few union issues, and employment inequality, job gap between rich and poor, widest ever on record.
Scary.
Yeah, just amazing stuff that's going on, folks.
Well, anyhow.
So, you know, I hope you can hope you join us. And
enjoy what's left of the night, folks, and talk to you tomorrow.
Good night.
Why do you think I left? And you're more concerned with me.